Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of heroes has dawned and the path of public service continues tonight with the Diana Montfort Show. Greetings and welcome, Diana. How are you this evening?
I am just fine. Thanks, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and as always, I'm looking forward to your show. If you need me, just holler.
Well, thanks. Let me tell people about what this show is about. I am transgender. I have been all of my adult life. This show airs the third Saturday of every month. We concern ourselves with matters LGBTQ for the most part. We are cheerfully progressive. We won't even pretend not to be. We are seriously politically biased and like it that way. Thank you very much. And I have a terrific guest for us tonight. Her name is Ms. Jillian Weiss. She's an attorney. She is the author of two books, one of which she is the only person so far to write a book about transgender law and as it applies in these United States. That book was co-authored with Mr. David Cruz, and it is called Gender Identity and the Law. The other book she wrote, is Transgender Workplace Diversity, and that one I believe she wrote alone, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And here she is, Ms. Jillian Weiss. Well, hi there. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Very well. I mean, except now, for all the problems that we have going on.
Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln,
aside
you know, what
from
did you
all
think?
Of that, you know, 100-plus bills introduced into legislatures, you know, demanding anti-trans or creating anti-trans laws and rules, it's gotten crazy.
You told me just before we went on that Missouri and Idaho have passed bills which basically prohibit any kind of orthodox medical treatment for transgender people of any age. Is that
the You know, I did say Idaho, but I want to say I was incorrect. It was actually Utah was the other one. But, yeah, they've introduced these bills, and, you know, I know in the Utah legislation, it specifically states that the medical personnel who do these kinds of medical care will be brought up on charges of, you know, whatever it may be, and that if proven, then their medical license will be removed.
So and they will be jailed,
that,
probably.
I don't remember if Utah, I don't think Utah involves jail, but Missouri might. You know, and all these are being challenged by our larger legal defense programs. ACLU,
such as Lambda and the ACLU.
Legal, Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund, you know, and many others. So, you know, I think that we are pushing back on these and that those that have passed, we hopefully will be able to get courts to reverse those. And I would like to see that, certainly.
You were telling me also about an organization that concerns itself with the Holocaust that is called This Genocide. Can you explain what that organization is about and what the true meaning of genocide is?
Yeah, the Lemkin Institute is named after a famous or perhaps among the community-famous academic who actually coined the term genocide and advocated for his entire life for a genocide treaty to be signed by all nations, most of which have, except for the United States, Russia, and China, so and maybe North Korea. I don't actually remember all of them, but anyway, so that's who Raphael Lemkin was. And so this Lemkin Institute is devoted to genocide studies and has a lot of scholars who are involved in a study of genocide. And they published a pamphlet statement, I don't know, a detailed analysis of why they felt that this anti-trans legislation is genocidal in nature. And they point out, as people who are involved in the field know, but not everyone does, genocide is more than just killing. If you basically try to wipe out that community by, you know, taking their children and, you know, to another country and raising them, you know, as a different cultural identity or...
Not unlike what we did with the Native Americans, right?
Yes. I mean, clearly that was genocide. And it also includes banning a particular language and, of course, trying to prevent, you know, I mean, I guess I would say trying to prevent, you know, people from growing up in that identity. These are all forms of genocide. Now, some of them are slow motion genocide, like, you know, taking children. That is a process that's going to happen over, you know, years of in terms of erasing the identity or banning a language, you know, as opposed to the kind of fast action genocide where, you know, masses of people are actually being killed based on their identity in order to wipe it out.
The attorney, the transgender attorney.
Go ahead.
No, never mind.
Well, I was just going to say that the Lemkin Institute's analysis, you know, really kind of demonstrated what the intent and effect of these anti-trans bills are. It's not about, quote, saving the children, because constantly children are being raised as an issue for this kind of medical treatment. And, of course, people underage are not getting bottom surgery through, you know, qualified medical professionals. That's not part of the standards of care. But this is their ruse. And basically, they're trying to prevent new trans people from coming into being. I mean, that's actually what they are looking to accomplish, and it's been said openly.
Now, the transgender lawyer, John Principale, said to me that this time around, instead of sticking us all in camps, as they did under the Nazis with the Pink Triangle nonsense, they will put us in mental hospitals, which will in effect be concentration camps, but will be, of course, touted as something for our own mental health to cure us of this most unbecoming disease called being ourselves.
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible in the sense that this did happen in the past, you know, that anyone who expressed an LGBTQ identity too openly could be taken involuntarily to a mental health facility. So it's not like we've never seen this before. And, of course, they would dress it up in modern language, and, you know, it wouldn't sound as stark. It would just sound like they're trying to help people, just like they're saying we want to help these children. Well, by preventing them from expressing their gender when, you know, clearly this is something that is an essential and functional part of their being, they're hurting them because basically they're, you know, denying them the reality that they know. And that means also oftentimes they will go through a very confusing and complicated puberty. And, you know, they're phrasing this as we're concerned about people's health. But I don't actually think that's the real reason. I think that's the pretext. That's the subterfuge. So it's perfectly logical that someone, given the outrageous stuff that we've seen in the last year, which I never would have imagined in a million years happening now. I mean, anyway, given the outrageous stuff we've seen, it's entirely possible that someone could pass a law that basically says, you know, I'm sure there's already laws in the books that say, you know, there's certain kinds of mental health issues that require involuntary, you know, hospitalization. And, you know, this could very well be one of them. You could say, well, there's a higher risk of suicide And so, you know, we have to make sure everybody goes to this hospital.
Why do you think this is happening now? What's the real reason?
The real reason. My sense is that this is simply politics, meaning that the Republicans see a possibility of getting political advantage. And they are riling people up about this issue, as they have riled people up about other issues. And when you get somebody really going, they're going to buy your newspaper or watch your TV show. And that makes a lot of money for some people. So I don't know that those people are necessarily, you know, care one way or the other about transgender people, but they're selling newspapers. And then they're, of course, using the political parties to further whip up the electorate and sell even more clicks. So the Republicans are finding that this is, or they feel this is an advantage. Trying to remember what state, but just in the last couple of days, a very anti-trans candidate was defeated over a more affirming candidate, and that was held up as a sign that there is backlash happening to what the Republicans have been doing. But honestly,
well,
I think it comes down to raw power.
The governor of Colorado just this past week, signed bills guaranteeing the right to reproductive freedom and the right to gender-affirming care in Colorado. I think that's great. If the Supreme Court were to pass laws forbidding transgender care, would it be possible for certain states, New York, California, Colorado, and others, ignoring the law and providing transgender care anyway? Would that be possible?
Let me just say that technically the Supreme Court does not pass laws. They make judgments about whether laws are, you know, properly in place or how they should be applied. So if you're referring to, I mean, it's possible that Congress, if it really got crazy enough, could pass a bill that somehow impacts this. I mean, what's difficult about it is that the federal government is a government of limited powers, and they generally don't control most stuff. They get to control things that are kind of national in scope. They might not have the power. But, I mean, that doesn't mean they can't make it up somewhere and say, oh, well, this is about commerce or something. I don't know. So in that case, you would have a nationwide ban. And then the Supreme Court, of course, we see how reactionary it, you know, would probably say, fine.
Yes, but could the governors of various states ignore the law and take care of us anyway?
Technically, no, because the federal law is supreme, assuming that it's constitutional, which I don't think it would be, but okay, the federal law is the supreme law of the land. So if the federal government says, you know, you have to have truck tires of a certain size, the state can't say, well, we don't feel like that. We want to just, you know, have whatever sizes we want. Because there's a federal law regulating transportation, the state can't do that. And it would be the same thing in this scenario, unlikely as it may be, that Congress passed something that interfered with the ability to, you know, get transgender treatment, maybe something in the health insurance laws. You know, certently the insurance was highly impacted by Obamacare, and maybe there'll be some amendment to that that says you can't do this. So that's like some scenarios that I could see as possible. And the question then is, you know, what's the Supreme Court going to do? Well, the truth is you have more very conservative right-wing judges on that court than you have other judges of other political persuasions. So it's a simple matter of numbers.
We do have swing judges, though, justices, which is a good thing. Sometimes even amateur rapists like Kavanaugh do go to a more liberal bent, wouldn't you say?
That's true. It's possible. And it also would probably depend on whether at the time the Republicans still felt strongly about it, because it would likely happen, you know, some years from now. And maybe the Republicans will realize, hey, this issue is not really working too well. And actually, there's a lot of evidence right now that it's not working too well. So then, you know, they would kind of be like, well, we don't want the Supreme Court to rule against us, but, I mean, it's not a major issue. So there would be less pressure on the justices to decide. And I think that anybody can see that basically saying you can't be transgender is just going to invite people ignoring the law. I mean, you know, or saying that, let's say, health insurance can't help you pay for gender-affirming care. People are going to find other ways to get it, like you said. They'll go to the street.
Well, yeah, I'm old enough to remember when being transgender was, in effect, illegal. I, however, was lucky. I went to Dr. Harry Benjamin, the man who refined the process to the point where it was viable for a lot of people, and I used to carry a note in my purse saying, you know, they'd printed it up at the office, the Harry Benjamin office, that I was under medical care for gender dysphoria. Thankfully, I was never stopped by the police or anything, but I always made sure to carry that with me and made photocopies of it because, you know, they tended to wear out. And I remember that the Warhol superstar, Candy Darling, would buy herself black market hormones, not only because she was economically disadvantaged, but because she took such a fail-safe amount that no doctor would prescribe what she wanted. Supposedly, she took one hormone pill, quite a strong one, every hour on the hour. Not surprisingly, she died of cancer at 29. We cannot allow this to happen. Now, you and I being transgender and public figures, if we were, say, arrested or incarcerated in a hospital, would that not arouse a certain indignation among right-minded people?
Yes, I don't think that would be allowed because, you know, 20% of the country is basically independent. You know, and you got 40% on either side, Republicans and Democrats. And there are a lot of Republicans who are very reasonable. It's only, you know, in the last, since George W. Bush and the Tea Party and all that stuff, you know, that's when things have really gotten crazy because there's just this politics of anger that was really pursued and has been pursued, and they're still pursuing it. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a problem when you have people who are dependent and keeping on power on pushing a certain group down.
Well, that sounds very Gnostic, doesn't it?
I mean, it's dangerous. It is dangerous. And I will tell you that I have looked, I have, if they inspected my Google searches, they would find searches for Canada and Mexico and, you know, other places. How do you get a visa? You know, how do you, I am preparing for that if necessary. I mean, the very fact that I need to speak about it means that we're already in a state of emergency. You know, the emergency shouldn't be declared like after it's happened. That's not super useful. What's useful is kind of seeing it before it happens and seeing around the bend of that railroad track that there's a railroad, there's a train coming down the track. So, you know, I think now is the time to begin to think about what if.
That's fine for us. But if you're, say, a hairdresser in Missouri, you don't have that option.
I mean, a hairdresser in Missouri might...
Or whatever, a manicure. What I mean is, If you are living paycheck to paycheck, and you've never been out of the state, and you like your community and they like you, and now suddenly you have to move to a foreign country in adulthood, that's going to be very difficult and indeed impossible for a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, yes, because there are very specific requirements to live in other countries, and they are not going to want to see, they already don't want to see a huge influx of immigrants from America. People
who will become public charges.
Possibly become public charges. There's already a lot of restrictions on going to foreign countries. But what I was going to say is that, you know, somebody in Missouri, as you mentioned, who's been there their whole life and they love the community and vice versa, the best things for them may not be trying to go to a foreign country. Maybe for them it would mean, you know, changing their life in some way that would make it easier for them to be with the people that, you know, they care about. But, you know, not be dragooned by the authorities. I mean, there might be ways. There might be things to think about. You know, in the past, they've used these anti-cross-dressing laws to arrest transgender people, basically saying, well, you're not allowed to dress as the opposite sex. You have to have at least 3 pieces of clothing of your, you know, birth assigned sex. So it's possible that that could be the mechanism. Or the mechanism could be, as you mentioned before, some kind of mental health issue. And whatever it is, we will have to figure out how to live with that.
Because if we don't, what about someone, a thing like the Stonewall Rebellion? I mean, we have rights, we're human. And supposedly they're inalienable, ha, 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 it says here. I mean, what if we just say no? I'm going to be me, and I don't care what you people think. And that's that.
Well, what if there's laws in the books that would subject that person?
There were laws during
arrest.
Stonewall. And there were...
No, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
And during Compton, you know, the Compton riot in 1966 in San Francisco. So,
right.
I mean, there have been... all this relates to the Judeo-Christian ethic. In ancient Rome, in ancient Greece, it was fine to be whatever you were, sexually. Here, now, and for 2,000 years, it's been the norm to castigate anyone who engages in non-procreative sex, in all sorts of things. And, I mean, when are people going to grow up?
Never. This is our species in action. I do think that there has been progress. We no longer burn our firstborn alive to the god Molech and think that that's fine and okay. We no longer have legal slavery, although there is slavery that still exists and, you know, that we're trying to root out, but not very successfully. So there's been progress. But we are where we are in our kind of level, our human development, and we can't jump ahead, you know, 3 jumps just because we'd like to. This may be an issue that will open people's eyes to a lot of understanding about the nature of the extremely conservative right-wing Republicans. And I remember I did a radio show. It wasn't a radio show. I was on the Tucker Carlson show before he got, like, super completely crazy. We had a little discussion about transgender rights. And, you know, he posed the kind of ridiculous question, I thought, of, well, you know, what if, like, there's certain SBA loans set aside for women. What if they just decide, well, now I'm going to be a woman so I can get this SBA loan, then, you know, that's $11 billion, and it create a lot of fraud and stuff. I was like, okay, well, have you ever seen a case where someone said, I'm of a different sex so I can get an SBA loan. Like, show me where these people are and then we can talk about it. But in other words, I dealt with him fairly gently. I mean, I think I was very clear, but I didn't get angry. I didn't get upset. I didn't call him a jerk. And when I got out of the studio, I received a phone call from a very unfamiliar area code, and it was a woman in Canada. And she was surprised to get me. She thought she was going to get a voicemail, but it was me. And after she got over, you know, being a little abashed, she said she wanted to let me know that I had changed her mind about transgender issues, that I think she was maybe from some not highly populated place in Canada. And she said she really didn't understand, but, you know, and she liked the show. But, you know, now she kind of understood why transgender people need rights and so on and so on. And so I said, you know, thank you so much. I'm glad. But I was blown away by that. Like, some woman from Canada got on the phone and just said, you changed my view, from the Tucker Carlson show. So you just never know what the effect is going to be of your advocacy or your sacrifice. I mean, there are people going to be sacrificed because this is a fight that we're engaged in about our lives.
I never thought it would come to this, did you?
No, absolutely not. Especially after marriage equality passed. I was like, okay, this country has changed. But it's reminding me that no, it has not changed. That was the end of a pendulum swing, and now we're swinging in the other direction.
Kagan is a lesbian.
Well,
if they declared...
she hasn't acknowledged that.
She does acknowledge it, doesn't she?
She does? Okay.
I
missed the news.
If they declare homosexuality illegal, well, Pete Buttigieg, Kagan, all these people, would that render their political careers impossible? Would they be booted out? Would it be like the 1950s, you know, you're suspected of being a communist, therefore you must, you know, atone and leave and go and, you know, all that silliness?
Well, I mean, I don't think they could declare homosexuality illegal, but they could declare same-sex marriage illegal. You know, maybe they could go back and declare non-heterosexual sex as illegal, but they couldn't make someone being in the status of a homosexual illegal. But it still would cause a great deal of discomfort for every high-profile gay person because they're representing this country, even if they're just on the local school board. They're representing the government of our country. And, you know, to be declaring that these officials representing our government are now illegal, and that other representatives of the government are saying, we're making this illegal. I mean, the tension between our ideals and the reality would then be so tightly wound that I just don't think that they could pull it that far, which doesn't mean...
Did you think it would go so far in Missouri and Utah about transgender rights?
I did not. You know, I'm obviously aware these things are happening now, but I mean, a year ago, 2 years ago, I would have said no. There's been a couple of bills here and there. There's been like, couple dozen bills. And, you know, there were like two or three states. And I wouldn't have thought this would happen. I mean, we're beyond that, right? We had the transgender tipping point in 2014, if I recall. And
Laverne Cox, yes,
did.
On the cover of Time.
Yeah, it was,
yes.
The cover, exactly. Well, Time's not great for its predictions. But anyway, I mean, I'm shocked. And the thing that I'm really concerned about is not me, okay? It doesn't matter if I'm shocked, okay? I can deal with it. I'm concerned about the young people that we have been telling it will get better. You know, we're there to support and protect you. You can come out and, you know, be protected and not have to worry and so on, and this is your right and blah, blah. those kids are in for a rude shock.
Well, I think they'll ultimately save us all because they will not vote for this kind of institutionalized bigotry. This will just seem ridiculous and pointless to young people. And I think, given the fact that the millennials are, I think, even larger, an even larger generation than the boomers, or just about the same size, I think they may be the ones to save us.
Well, the millennials are now 40 years old, so...
They're no longer young people, yes.
No longer young people. I think we have to look to... I heard Generation Z, and then I heard Generation Alpha. I don't know, whatever. But the young people, and I do think that young people increasingly over the years have come to feel that this kind of state intrusion on private personal lives and desires and, you know, ways of being is just ridiculous and shouldn't be countenanced. And so we see a larger percentage of the young people. I think a large amount of millennials feel that way. And I do think that there will be a demographic that all of the major anti-trans figures kind of fall off the cliff. And I think it's going to, you know, get quiet again. But it's going to take time. And so what about a kid who's coming out right now?
The conservatives, are they upset because they tend to be white, probably Protestant and prosperous? And let's just face it, we are not a WASP nation anymore. You know, I mean, is this what's making them so virulent, so against anything that is counter to the ethos of the 1950s?
Well, you know, times change and people change. I do think that it's going to be more accepting in the future, even though we are now experiencing this backlash after kind of a spring of freedom kind of over the last couple of years. And I just think this is the way society works. The pendulum swings back and forth. And if it doesn't, you know, usually there's some kind of war coming. I do think that, you know, sharing of power through a pluralistic system like we have means that everybody feels like at some point they have the opportunity to win. So, you know, Republicans right now are, you know, feeling their oats because they've been succeeded in all these different things that they really wanted for years and years and years. But the pendulum is going to swing back the other way when people are like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't so good for our society. How come I read this story in the paper about a woman who had to wait, you know, 6 months to give birth to her stillborn baby, or someone else who had, you know, a disease that needed to be treated, but it could potentially hurt the fetus, so the doctors won't do it, and had a, you know, tremendously difficult birth or whatever. I think a lot of people are going to say, hey, wait a minute, this is not what I thought we were doing. I thought we were just saying, you know, there's no more abortion clinics. But if someone really needs an abortion, they should get it. Or they read about the 11-year-old girl who got impregnated by her father. You know, I mean...
Oh, my God.
We have to have some kind of reasonable balance here. And I think there are people in the Republican Party that think that way right now and that increasingly will in the future. And there will be a backlash against those anti-trans figures and the Republican Party generally. That's my feeling. When will that happen? I mean, at least a few years from now. You know, 5 years maybe. I don't know. But a kid who's coming out right now, can't wait that time.
Do you think that the pro-choice, pro-abortion folk will save us, that we'll slip in under the wire with them when they demand abortion pills and other forms of freedom that the Republicans want to curtail? Will that bleed over into us, just as the governor of Colorado did a, sort of a twin bill, both, you know, gender-affirming care and reproductive freedom? Do you
and
think
also,
that...
I just want to tell you, he also declared Colorado a sanctuary state or a safe state for transgender people.
Well, that's what I meant earlier when I said, is it possible that even if Congress declares or the Supreme Court, someone declares it illegal to be transgender, that we could, you know, that some states could just ignore that law and have a safe harbor for us?
Listen,
the transgender community.
To ignore the law. They're not supposed to ignore it. But you know what? They have successfully avoided laws of all types. I mean, the classic example is when Brown versus Board of Education was decided and there was no more educational segregation, some states just closed down all the schools. You want school? Go to a private school. Find your own school.
They started very theistic, Christian, discriminatory schools, yes.
And basically they just ignored these proclamations by the various courts and made up all kinds of things, and we need extra time and safety of the children and blah, blah, blah. So, yes, states can resist in various ways depending on, you know, how smart their lawyers are. Yeah, I would hope that states would resist such a law.
Do you think we'll ever come to the point of civil war or revolution?
Possible. It's possible. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but I just see a trend, you know, in a straight line from the Tea Party in the 2010s, you know, through the 2030s, and which is not that far away. That's the line that we're traveling on. If we keep going in that direction, then yes, hopefully we will not.
If a Republican wins the presidency in 2024, what will so many people do? Women, trans folk, all LGBTQ folk, people of color? I mean, there are so many more of us than there are conservative Caucasians. Can't we somehow... you know, just use numbers? Is there not safety in numbers?
Well, we will do as we did before, which is to endure. And this is why resilience is an important trait. And, you know, you can't compare one group to another or one civil rights campaign to another. But, you know, Black people were enslaved in this country for 400 years. And we still have Black people because there was tremendous endurance and resilience and suffering through horrible situations. But, you know, recognizing that there was a value to carrying on, to continue to be there. And, you know, conditions have improved, certainly, not as far as they should be. I mean, we still have double the unemployment for Black men as the general population. But, you know, we have to endure. And what I mean by that is we find ways to live in between the stones of the law, so to speak. You know, we have to find our way. And people have done it all throughout history. It doesn't mean there won't be a lot of pain and that people won't suffer. But, you know, we will survive.
Yes, but what if we don't want to endure and suffer? What if we say no, and I'm going to stick my gun up your ass and pull the trigger, Mr. Republican? I mean, that's an option too, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the problem with advocating violence is that it's not going to
solve
Trump
the problem.
Well, Trump does it. No, I understand. I understand that the worst person in the world does it. It doesn't mean that we should imitate him. You know, but the point is that, you know, even if a small-scale rebellion or revolution or something like that was achieved on some state level or something, I mean, it's not going to change people's minds. And it's also probably not going to succeed. There's just we don't have enough people to do anything of that nature. You know, the first meeting with the U.S. Army would be the end of that revolution. So, I don't see that happening. I think at most, if that were to happen, some people would be killed, and there would be accusations of murder on both sides, and it would be just another horrible event in U.S. history.
It does seem sort of hopeless, doesn't it, right now?
No, I mean, I think what I'm saying is it's not hopeless. And, you know, by saying it's not hopeless, I mean, that's part of the reason why I wouldn't advocate violence in this situation, because
I wasn't advocating violence, but I was suggesting that there is always the possibility of violence.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for making that clarification. You know, but I don't think we need to actually go there in order to achieve our goals. I think we just need to keep on keeping on and prying the fingers of those, you know, Republicans who are making hay out of this from the necks of our young children. And, you know, I do think that standing up for ourselves will be very important in terms of, you know, showing people that we're there. I mean, I've seen really wonderful, moving testimony by parents of trans kids in various legislative hearings around the country, and it has made a huge difference for a lot of people. I mean, in some ways, by going through an experience like this, it forces people to learn about us and the conditions we're living in and the rights that we deserve and that we are not getting. And that education, I mean, I don't want to have to do it because people are suffering, but if I could get that into every home in the country, I would want to do it. And that is what's happening. I mean, before this show, I looked up the word transgender in Click News. I mean, I couldn't even get to the bottom of that list. And, you know, I remember 10 years ago, I mean, you look up transgender, there was really nothing there except sex ads. So maybe it's farther back. Maybe that's 20 years ago. But, you know, still, we've come a long way. And everybody knows about us now, and everyone's got an opinion. And I think simply by showing that we are valid human beings who are part of this country, then I think people will begin to understand that this is not something to be afraid of.
Well, that's why I started my television show in 1990. I wanted people to see that we were all more alike than we were different. And I wanted to highlight trans people of accomplishment like you, who are model citizens, who are aspirational figures to people of all sexual persuasions. I mean, you know, they have to see, that's why I asked you to mention, because people have to see that we are not, you know, demons, that we, and this nonsense of they're grooming children. Well, certainly heterosexuals have been grooming children since the dawn of time. We are not grooming children. We are accepting children who are already trans. Nobody becomes trans. It's not a case of, you know, going into a department store and seeing a lipstick and saying, oh, mommy, I want to be a girl. It's not like that. It's your soul that is, you know, trans. I mean, I don't believe in, you know, binary sex roles and this is for boys and this is for girls, but ultimately there are certain traits peculiar to genders, and I mean, you know, we just, it comes from within. You know that, I know that. It's not, nobody suddenly just like that sees a football and wants to be a man, you know?
Well, I do want to say that as a lawyer, I understand why they're making this argument that it's grooming children, because they are misinterpreting, interpreting things in their worldview, like viewing abortion as a murder, you know. The idea that every single abortion is a murder is just, like, demonstrably ridiculous. So, but, you know, people believe what they want to believe, and they're interpreting our support of our trans kids as grooming. And they're saying, look, You made this child, or you contributed to this child being transgender. Listen, I had a client, and their teacher, and they, had trans students. As teacher has trans students in their classroom now.
Certainly mine teacher did,
country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see. I just lost my train of thought.
A teacher who had trans students.
Yes. And also they're trans themselves. And they felt the need to support some of the children. Children would come up to them and tell them, well, I feel like I'm bisexual or whatever. I mean, you have to deal with that. You can't be like, go away from me. I mustn't, talk about anything with you. And so, brief discussions were had. But those were interpreted by certain people as, somehow nefarious and maybe going behind the parents' backs and so on. I mean, the situation got resolved, but the point is that, it's not grooming like trying to groom a child for sex, where you should show them favors and you give them things they want and you compliment them and all this stuff. And, eventually you kind of lead them down the garden path. But that's a whole different kind of grooming than what these Republicans are talking about. They're saying if you speak to a transgender kid and say, I support you, you're grooming.
If you even acknowledge that transgenderism exists, you're grooming, yeah. It's silly.
Right?
Yeah.
That's right. And you know what? If you look at it from the point of view of an effective, PR hack, it's pretty effective. So we will see, of course, what happens, but it allows them to go on and fulminate about grooming children when that's not at all what's happening. And instead of talking about actual transgender issues and what transgender people need or what anybody needs, they're just coming up with these kind of fake headlines. It's been done through all history, people kind of twisting the way it is in order to gain advantage. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I hope that they're out of power soon.
How likely is that to happen?
I think it's pretty darn likely. I mean, the largest group supporting Republicans are, older white people.
Well, that's what I was saying. They're losing the numbers. There aren't that many older white people left,
Yeah. That's right. And now they're kind of holding back the tide a little bit. They made inroads with Hispanic people. But my feeling is that ultimately all this stuff's going to become irrelevant. And the Republicans in the future will realize that and say, okay, let's forget about that. Let's get on to, something that really matters.
My father was a Republican, but he was remarkably unbigoted when it came to gender identity, homosexuality. He married two Latin women. My mother was from Spain, my stepmother from Cuba. And he was born in the South in 1917. So, I mean, he was remarkably evolved for being born in the South in 1917. But he was a Republican. But Republicans weren't always these Bible-thumping crazies. It used to mean something completely different years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Changed.
Well, anyway, but so ultimately you have hope for the transgender world and cause.
Ultimately, yes. In the short term, it's going to be very nasty. So we need to prepare ourselves in the sense of not becoming afraid and, despairing, but to see, how would I actually deal with this law being passed? What would I do? Just like you make plans for what happens if a hurricane, comes our way. You talk to your kids about it. You have a meeting place. You have a go bag. You know what to do. Doesn't mean that you're not going to get hit by the hurricane, but at least you're prepared to get away if you need to. And you're not like at the last minute going, well, what do I do now? Hey, let's look it up. Meanwhile, the hurricane's coming. So, just take a moment to think about what's my preparation for this kind of situation or that kind of situation. And I think the answer will be different for different people.
That's it. That's what I meant about people who are embedded in a community they love. Their families have been there forever. They are not exactly rolling in money. There's no, it's impractical. As you pointed out, it would be impractical for these people to go somewhere when it's much safer to be surrounded by friends and loved ones who might protect them from encroaching fascism and bigotry.
Yes, there will be very bad consequences for a lot of people from these laws. And that's why we have to think about, you know, what can we as individuals do to prepare and to support those who are advocating for us, the ACLU, Lambda Legal, Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund, whatever. You know, those are people who are going into court and saying, no, you cannot do this. It's not in line with our constitutional values. And, you know, seeking to stop these bills from going into effect. And,
well, you've done
that
all your career, haven't you?
Well, I mean, sure, I've advocated for transgender people. And, yes, I've done a lot of court work with regard to transgender people. I mean, over the last 20
years. And written two books on the subject.
I've written two books, a lot of law review articles. I have about a total of 65 trans cases that I've litigated in the courts. And but there's all ways that we can each contribute in our own way, even if it's just supporting someone else to make them aware that you're there for them, that, you know, you're concerned and whatever. Just, you know, some kind of support, contributing to an organization with money or time. You know, I think about that. I mean, imagine if a million people tomorrow volunteered for the for Lambda Legal and Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund. Well, what difference do you think that would make for this cause? So we each have to think about it. It may be a local school board issue that you want to be involved in. It may involve being on the school board. It may involve talking to school board officials. But we can each do it in our own way. And if you have access to that, I say use it. Like, so if you're the mother of a trans kid, you see that there are, you know, some potential problems coming, you know, ask for a meeting with the principal or the superintendent. Ask for a meeting with the PTA and tell them about your concerns and say, you know, thinking about how to handle this. What are you thinking? So that, you know, we have allies.
How can people contact you?
Oh, my telephone number and email address are all over the internet. So if you look for Jillian
Much
Weiss
to your
attorney,
displeasure,
you'll...
yes.
Don't
I
give you the number,
but
it's like people have to get a pencil and no, wait, I got to write this down. What was that? Was that a 7 or a 4?
Right, exactly.
But you just look me up on good old Google, Jillian Weiss Law or whatever. And actually, that's my website, jtweisslaw.com. So
great.
You can always look there.
And how can they access your two books?
Gender Identity in the Law is a law school textbook, so it's only offered by an academic publisher. And let me just not mess up the name of the publisher so I don't get in lots of trouble. And then the other one is... published by a, you know, Vanity Press. And so that's available on Amazon.
You know, I feel much better now than I did when we started this conversation. I feel that maybe there is some shred of hope. And I was feeling pretty hopeless when we started. I really thought it was time to head for the ramparts here, you know.
Yes, it's easy to get like that, and I won't say that I don't get like that sometimes. I do. I go up and down, but, you know. I just want to say that the publisher of the book is Carolina Academic Press.
Of which book?
The law school textbook, Gender Identity and the Law.
Okay.
Oh, and I just want to correct something. I'm not the only person to write about, you know, gender identity issues. There have been a lot of people who've written about legal issues and gender identity and so on, but I am the first, with David Cruz, a professor at USC, to publish a law school textbook with an academic publisher, which is kind of a big deal. I mean, you should have seen all the work that we had to put in, the proposals and so on and so forth.
Well, you've been a professor yourself.
Yes, I have. And I'm not now, but I did love teaching, and hopefully maybe I'll be able to pick up a class or two at the local law schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, my guest has been truly brilliant and groundbreaking transgender attorney, Ms. Jillian Weiss. And where would we be without you, my goodness, who really cares about the community and really does, she walks the walk, as they say, and talks the talk. She does it. She doesn't sit at home and tisk, tisk. Oh, they treat us so badly. She actually goes to court. She actually takes transgender clients. She knows what she's doing. And the show airs every third Saturday of the month. I am your host, Diana Montford, arch-tranny of the universe. I am trans, have been since I was 19. And folks, our show ain't no 19 now. Mm-mm. So I've been trans a long time. And, well, all my life, really. Love you, Jill. Thanks so much for being on.
My pleasure.
And hopefully, unless we're all arrested, we will be back in 3 weeks. So love you, folks, and be strong, be brave.
Thank you, Diana, and thank you, Jillian, for an awesome show. Thanks also to our wonderful audience, whether you clicked on the link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again.